Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Everybody, I am Becky Noble. I am your host of Conservative Cauldron Radio, to which you are now listening. I'm sure everyone is thinking, thank God it's Friday. I know I am. Those of us here in the St. Louis region, it's supposed to be spring, and well, I don't know if that groundhog was smoking dope. I don't know. I don't know what if he's drinking. I don't know if he's drinking or doing drugs. I'm sure the PETA people will be called in any time now. But I don't know what he was doing when he made this prediction, because this is definitely not spring. But anyway, I guess we will muddle through it and carry on. We've got a lot to talk about. It's been a busy week. A lot's been going on. And I guess probably the biggest thing right now going on is Barack Obama's visit to the Middle East, his visit to Israel. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, well, why is he even there? Every time that Benjamin Netanyahu comes over here and visits the White House, they make him go out the back door with the trash man, and they completely snub him and completely, you know, treat him horribly. So, and even there's a lot of Israelis that are kind of scratching their heads and asking why is he here? I think that for me personally, I'm not sure why people don't get the fact that I don't think that he is a big friend to Israel. And one of the biggest reasons that I think that is because Barack Obama sat in Reverend Jeremiah Wright's church for 20 years. And I know he likes to tell people that he wasn't there when Reverend Jeremiah was saying, goddamn America, and, you know, kill Whitey and hate Whitey and whatever all else he was saying. But, you know, there's ample examples of him, you know, beginning sentences with those Jews did that, and those Jews did this. And so it's quite obvious from a lot of Reverend Wright's sermons that I don't think he has a whole lot of love for Israel and a whole lot of love for Jewish people. So I'm not sure how you could sit in a church for 20 years and listen to that week after week after week after week and not absorb some of that yourself. But Caroline Glick, she is the managing editor of the Jerusalem Post. It's a rather extensive piece, but she's written a really good piece here that kind of probably sums up the general feelings of Israelis kind of scratching their heads, going, well, that's nice, but why is he here? And it's funny, too, because, you know, the left would love you to think that the whole world gets a tingle up their leg, just like Chris Matthews does whenever Barack Obama steps foot on a stage. And that's not entirely true. There was a several surveys done in Israel, you know, prior to President Obama's visit to Israel. And one of them says that he has a 10% approval rating in Israel. Another one here says 32% of Israelis respect the president, but they don't like him. And if he thinks his public relations is bad in Israel, well, the Palestinians are not loving them some Barack Obama a whole lot either. They like him even less. So if he's going to be hanging out in Israel for a while, he's got a lot of work to do. And like I said, Caroline Glick, who's the managing editor of the Jerusalem Post, has it's a pretty extensive article here. And she even says, when I first heard that he was going to make this trip, my first thought was, this is one giant photo op. That's all it is. And one of her thoughts here in this piece is, much of the coverage of Obama's trip has focused on symbolism. Well, imagine that. So his photo opportunities are, they're rather transparent. He's not hiding them very well, if he is, in fact, trying to hide them. She also goes on to say here that the only revealing aspect of Obama's itinerary and his decision to, on the one hand, bypass Israel's elected representatives by spurning the invitation to speak before the Knesset, and on the other hand, to address a handpicked audience of university students, an audience grossly overpopulated by unelectable radical leftists. Wow, that never happens, does it? Barack Obama in a room full of lefties who have not been elected. I thought that was, you know, that's really interesting. You know, when most presidents and prime ministers and elected public officials like that, when they go to a foreign country, they usually speak before that foreign country's governing body. And the fact that that's not happening here is, it's very telling, I think, and it's very, maybe kind of verifies here what the survey says, if you will, about Barack Obama's likability in Israel and in the Middle East. And it's funny because at the end of this piece, she goes on to say that the truth is that we don't know why Obama is coming to Israel. The Obama administration has not indicated where its Israel policy is going, and Obama's Republican opposition is in complete disarray on foreign policy and not in any position to push him to reveal his plans. While we can say with certainty that the administration that supports the, quote, air quote, democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and did so much to clear all obstacles to its election is snubbing the democratically elected Israeli government and indeed Israel's elected officials in general. Obama's transmission of this message in the lead up to this visit through symbols and action alike does not bode well for Israel's relations with the U.S. in the coming 4 years. And, you know, Obama said also as well that he really does not plan to change any of his foreign policy regarding Egypt and the Middle East. He is showing amazing support for Egypt and Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood over there. And, you know, if I'm Israel, I'm a little concerned. I'm a little frightened. It may not be a good 4 years for them. But we'll see what happens here in the coming week and the aftermath of this visit to see how it's received and to see what people really think about it. Another thing, oh my gosh, it was so amazing. If you haven't heard this clip, I kind of stopped what I was doing and just kind of stood there for a minute, and I just thought, oh my God. But I'm going to play this clip here of Obama speaking in Israel, and let's see what you think about it, and let's just see exactly what you might think about such a statement.
Afford to have our kids in beds sleeping, and suddenly a rocket comes through the roof. But my argument is, even though both sides may have areas of strong disagreement, may be engaging in activities that the other side considers to be a breach of good faith. We have to push through those things to try to get to an agreement, because if we get an agreement, then it will be very clear what the nature of that agreement is. There will be a sovereign Palestinian state, a sovereign Jewish state of Israel, and those two states, I think, will be able to deal with each other the same way all states do. I mean, you know, the United States and Canada has arguments once in a while, but they're not the nature of arguments that can't be solved diplomatically.
Are you kidding me? Really? Okay, the Israeli-Palestinian relationship is a lot like the U.S. and Canada. Well, now, let's see. I don't remember the last time that the Canadians flew any homicide bombers into Buffalo, New York, or, Detroit, it would be hard to tell. I don't know of any Canadians that strap bombs on their five-year-olds and teach them to yell Allah Akbar as they go into a pizza parlor and blow themselves up. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And that statement alone, that statement tells you everything you need to know about Barack Obama and his foreign policy, or the lack of it. It's all in that little 58-second clip right there, that he thinks that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is exactly like the relationship that the United States has with Canada. You can't say any more. You don't need to go any further. So there was that. And I hope that that one statement is not going to be forgotten. It's just so outrageous and just so asinine that it needs to be played over and over and over again. And, you know, this kind of leads me into the next thing that I wanted to talk about. I know CPAC is kind of old news at this point, but, you know, I wrote about this over at Conservative Cauldron blog last week. I think that when you saw statements by people like Rand Paul and Marco Rubio, and you saw the absence of John McCain and Lindsey Graham and people in that group, if you will, you know, I think that the fight between the old guys and the new guys, I think it's something that has to happen. It's got to be something that takes place. And it's not going to be pretty. And there could be a lot of girl fighting, a lot of hair pulling, a lot of name calling. But sometimes I think you have to have those conflicts in order to separate the men from the boys, for lack of a better way to put it, and to kind of have a kind of cleansing of sorts. And, you know, if that's what it takes, if it takes this little bit of conflict to happen, because the old guys have to realize that their time has passed. You know, they may have done a good job at one time, but right now, today, they're not cutting it. They're not doing the job. And sometimes you have to step aside and let the new people come in and let them give it a shot. Let them give it a try and see if they can do things a little bit better. Because right now, anything that the John McCain's and the Lindsey Graham's of the world are doing is not working. And so anyway, the GOP has done a lot of research, and I received a copy of this yesterday. It's called the Growth and Opportunity Project. And there was a committee of people, two of which on this committee, Henry Barber, I believe, is the son of former Mississippi Governor Haley Barber, and another name you might recognize is Ari Fleischer, who was President George W. Bush's first press secretary. The other people here include Sally Bradshaw, Zori Fonilatus, there's a mouthful, and Glenn McCall. So they've done a lot of work, and after the break here, I will touch on a couple of the things that they are looking to address in this revamp, this makeover, if you will, of the GOP. So I'm going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in just a minute with plenty more This is the Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble, your host, TGIF. I'm glad everybody's here. Thanks for listening, and I'll be right back.
You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
To the Conservative Cauldron, Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I'm glad everybody is here tonight, TGIF, because, well, it's Fridays, and Fridays is Conservative Cauldron time, and that's the way we roll. Anyway, we are discussing the Growth and Opportunity Project. It's a big, massive undertaking by the GOP, by the Republican Party, to kind of give Republicans a makeover, if you will. And they're going to be focusing on seven different areas of things that they want to improve on. There is messaging, demographic partners, campaign mechanics, friends and allies, fundraising, campaign finance, and primary process. And I just received a copy of this yesterday, so I've just started getting into this. And in the coming weeks, as I go through it and find out exactly what's in here, we'll talk a lot about more about it, because, you know, I'm really hoping there's some dynamic out of the box thinking going on here, because that's what needs to happen. We don't have a lot of choice. There's a lot of urgency that needs to be felt here if we are going to win any elections in the near future. And with 30 of the 50 governorships in the nation held by Republicans, maybe we need to take a look at the state level and see just exactly what they're doing. How are they getting all these Republican governors in, and how are we being successful on a state level as opposed to not being successful on a federal level? So I think maybe that's something that we need to look at and, you know, maybe get into a little bit. The other thing, when you're talking about elections and people who are going to be running in elections, Hillary Clinton put out it's a video this week, and she has come out in this video in support of gay marriage, and that's kind of a new position for her, because that wasn't always the case. And we'll listen to a little bit of Hillary here and her newfound support of gay marriage.
LGBT Americans are our colleagues, our teachers, our soldiers, our friends, our loved ones, and they are full and equal citizens and deserve the rights of citizenship. That includes marriage. That's why I support marriage for lesbian and gay couples. A few years ago, Bill and I celebrated as our own daughter married.
Isn't that nice? Her and Bill celebrated. Well, not quite sure how many years Bill and Hill are celebrating, but, you know, I think the biggest question that you can ask yourself about why she did this now, if she's not running in 2016, why the hell would you put out a video like this? You know, why else would you do it? Why would anybody care? You know, she's looking like she's been home in Chappaqua for a couple of months now, getting rested up. And what do they say about Dick Nixon? He was tan, rested, and ready. And, well, you know, Hillary's got another, gosh, at least another year and a half, 2 years before she'd really have to start stumping and looking like she was serious about anything. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. But, you know, I think that's all about shoring up your base. And but I think that if she does run and Republicans can produce a really fantastic, out-of-the-box, young, dynamic candidate, maybe in a Rand Paul, maybe in a Marco Rubio, I think that if she does run and it came down to a question of Hillary or someone young and energetic and new, a fresh face like that for Republicans, Hillary just may, it may not be a good fit for Democrats, because up against somebody like that, she may look, you know, used goods. You know, we've seen Hillary since the 90s, and up against a young, fresh face such as a Rand Paul or a Marco Rubio or anybody else, you know, a lot can happen between now and 2016, and a lot of other faces and a lot of other people could emerge. And if that does happen, I don't know how good her chances are going to be again, because, like I said, she's, you know, she's going to look like she's been around the block a couple of times, and, you know, people are going to be like, oh, Hillary again. So, you know, it might be interesting to see what happens there, to see if this is all part of Hillary's campaign for 2016. The other thing I want to talk about tonight is, I don't know if all of you have heard of the story. The story of a pastor. He is of Iranian descent. He's born and raised in Iran. His name is Saeed Abedini, and he and his wife came here in 2010. He is an American citizen, and he and his wife are, both of them are converts from Islam to Christianity. And Pastor Saeed has made a number of trips back and forth to Iran, originally to work with the underground church movement, with the house church movement in Iran, because such churches in Iran are frowned upon. And anyway, the last time that he went to Iran, he was detained and arrested and sentenced to 8 years in Evin prison, which is one of the nastiest of the nastiest places that you want to be. And they have been, his wife, Negma, Jay Sekulow's group, American Center for Law and Justice, a lot of people have been trying to work on Pastor Saeed's behalf and try to get him home, try to get him home to his family. The State Department has not been very helpful. They have not been very speedy about trying to get someone who is an American citizen. This man is an American citizen. He was born in Iran, but he's now an American citizen. The Iranians do not recognize his American citizenship, to which you would like to think that maybe our new Secretary of State, John Kerry, I like to call him Lurch, but, you know, for these purposes, we will call him Secretary of State Kerry. It would be nice if he would step it up a little bit and try to get this man home to his family, because he is, like I said, again, he is an American citizen, and this is where he belongs. And so there's been a lot of pressure put on him lately, like I said, by Jay Sekulow's group, ACLJ, Pastor Saeed's wife, Negma. She has a team of lawyers herself, and there has been a Republican representative from Virginia, his name is Frank Wolf, who has also been working on Pastor Saeed's behalf to get him home. They've been trying to put a lot of pressure on John Kerry and the State Department to do some work here on Pastor Saeed's behalf. John Kerry put out a statement today that said, I am deeply concerned about the fate of U.S. citizen Saeed Abedini, who has been detained for nearly 6 months and was sentenced to 8 years in prison in Iran on charges related to his religious beliefs. I'm disturbed by reports that Mr. Abedini has suffered physical and psychological abuse in prison, and that his condition has become increasingly dire. Such mistreatment violates international norms as well as Iran's own laws. He goes on to say, as an American citizen, Mr. Abedini deserves nothing less than the exercising of every diplomatic tool of the U.S. government to defend his basic human rights. A bipartisan bicameral group of lawmakers led by Representative Trent Franks of Arizona and Representative Henry Waxman of California also wrote a letter to Kerry on February 12th regarding this issue. So there is a website that you can go to called SaveSaeed.com to sign a petition, and it would be great if everybody goes there. But there's also another case here, too. I'm going to talk about it real quick here. I'll be writing about it next week. There's a German couple who are evangelical Christians who applied for and got political asylum here in this country. All they want to do is homeschool their children. And there is a German law that says you are forbidden to homeschool your children. This law dates back to the days of the Nazis, the days of the Third Reich, if that tells you anything. And so all these people wanted to do was to get asylum, come to America here, and to live and work and be able to homeschool their children and to tool them in a way that is consistent with their religious practices and their religious beliefs. And, well, the Department of Homeland Security is not too happy about that, and so they're trying to deport them back to Germany, where they will face most likely some hefty fines, probable imprisonment, and most likely losing the custody of their children to the state. So I will also be talking more about this German family. Glenn Beck was talking about them earlier this week. So we need to bring some attention to cases like this, because this is one of the founding principles of this country. People came to this country to worship as they wished. And now we are giving people who want to do just that, we are not only trying to deport them, but the State Department is dragging their feet when they're imprisoned in a foreign country. Really? Are you kidding me? I can't wrap my brain around that. This is one of the founding principles of America. And the Obama State Department can't get this right? I don't know. I just want you to be aware of these two cases, and we will be talking more about them in the weeks to come based on what happens. And hopefully we will get some justice, not only for Pastor Saeed, but for this German family who want nothing more than to raise their children the way they see fit and to homeschool them the way they see fit. Anyway, that just about does it here for tonight. I'm glad that everybody could be here. Glad everybody could make it. Hopefully we won't get too snowed in this weekend. The totals have been mixed, different numbers. But, hopefully everybody will be able to dig out, and it's all going to melt next week. So, hey, it's all good. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, and hope to see you again next time. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. You can find me at facebook.com/BeckyNoble. I am at Twitter at Patriot Witch. And as always, you can find me right here at Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio. Mm-hmm.